termed the Bible of India. At the same time, it includes a lot of information that is on a higher level spiritually than the Bible. Although we accept the basic truths of the Bible, we accept Jesus Christ. At the same time, there's more information that he wasn't able to reveal at that particular time because of the audience that he was addressing and working among. So the Bhagavad Gita, it actually begins from a very high level spiritually, describing the nature of the soul, the eternality of the soul, how not only will we always be, but that we always were. You can't really try to figure it out. It's beyond our ability, especially because we're in this conditioned stage of life right now. We're conditioned or affected by the material energy to such a degree that we can't perceive spiritually on the highest level. So we can't perceive these truths experientially. Is that a word? Experientially? That's right. I think it's the first time I've said. Experientially, we can't perceive these truths. But we can hear about them, understand them intellectually. And as we follow the process, if one takes up the proper path spiritually, then one can gain realization more and more of one's actual spiritual identity. That the eternality of the soul that becomes manifested or within our consciousness. It's already there, but it becomes something that we experience within our consciousness. And another aspect of the soul is full knowledge. So eternality in Sanskrit is sat. Chit refers to full knowledge. And ananda refers to unlimited happiness or bliss. You've probably heard these words before, Satchitananda. There's a swami called Satchitananda. Right? Ananda means bliss. Sat means eternal. Chit means full of knowledge. So that is the nature of the soul, and that's the beginning of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Very, very high level. And from there, so much more knowledge is explained. Not only the knowledge, but the path by which one can realize that knowledge. So that's important. And we all want to experience something, feel something. And if we have some understanding that material pleasure is temporary and limited, and we can actually go higher, we have the capacity to go higher, then we become interested in feeling something more than just material pleasure, experiencing something more than just material pleasure. And this is what this path affords one, that the process, the ability to go higher and to understand one's true self and one's spiritual self. So this book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, takes all the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita and expands upon it through stories, various anecdotes, through the lives of the great personalities, incarnations of God, great devotees of God, enlightened beings. So it's a very beautiful book because the philosophy is there, the path is given, and it's given, it's contained within the stories of all these great personalities. So this one particular verse is from one of the beginning chapters of the Bhagavatam, where a great sage by the name of Suta Goswami is speaking to so many other sages who gathered together to try to understand how to best help the people of the coming age, which is the age we're living in now, the age of Kali, which is characterized by warfare, strife, quarrel, laziness, everything that you see going on was predicted in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago. And so the sages were very concerned about us and how to best elevate us to the point of not being affected by all the degrading influences of this age of Kali. So the sages were asking various questions, and Suta Goswami is giving various answers here. And so, this is one verse I remember memorizing. 44 years ago, 1969, when I first became a monk in Buffalo, New York. And so it has a very special significance for me. And I will read the verse and then part of the explanation that's given by Srila Prabhupada, founder of the Hare Krishna movement. And then we'll talk a little bit. I don't have a clock here, so I don't know. Really.
I don't know where
or a watch or anything. So. Okay, so Sutta Goswami is speaking to the sages. They wanted to understand what's the best thing for humanity during this age. So Sutta Goswami is saying, I'll read the Sanskrit so you can hear it. It's a very beautiful language. You can repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Remember what you're hearing, like that, you can repeat it. Savai pum samparo dharmo. Ato bhaktera hup suje. Ahaitukiya pratiyata. Yayatma supraseedati. The supreme occupation of dharma for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving, devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. I'll read it again. The supreme occupation, or dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So I'll read part of the purport. This is the last paragraph. We have purposely denoted the word dharma. You've heard that before. As occupation. So that's the meaning. Occupation. Because the root meaning of the word dharma is that which sustains one's existence. So, in other words, dharma doesn't mean, it means occupation, but it doesn't mean job. Okay? It goes much deeper than that. A job also sustains one's existence, right? That's not the real meaning of the word, or the full meaning of the word, or the deeper meaning of the word dharma. Because in this sense, dharma refers to what sustains one's existence spiritually, what really sustains us. A living being's sustenance of existence is to coordinate his activities with his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, Krishna. So for those of you who don't know, Krishna is one of the names of the Absolute Reality, or God, in the Sanskrit language. God has many names in different languages describing God's different attributes, pastimes, qualities, etc. So one name of God, one principal name of God in Sanskrit is Krishna, which describes God as the all-attractive, supreme, conscious entity. So, Krishna is the central pivot of living beings. And he is the all-attractive living entity, or eternal form, amongst all other living beings, or eternal forms. Each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence. In other words, beyond this body, we have material forms, which are temporary. But spiritually, the soul has form. It's not fully manifested because we're covered over materially, or conditioned materially. The soul has an eternal form. That's what's being described here. And the supreme conscious entity, or the supreme soul, or Paramatma. Atma means soul. Heard that word, Atma, before? So Paramatma means supreme soul. So just like it's explained that within the heart is the Atma, the soul, within the heart region. And the soul generates consciousness throughout the body through the medium of the blood, actually. It's like if someone holds your hand really tight, after a while you lose consciousness in your fingers. Did anyone ever hold anyone's hand that tight? Anyway, just an example. Sure, that'll happen. Or when you freeze, you lose consciousness in your fingers because the blood's not running. So consciousness is in the blood, and it's being given to the body, permeating the body by the soul, which is in the region of the heart. So the Paramatma is also in the heart, or the supreme conscious entity, or God, is also within the heart. Not just within the heart, but within every atom, sustaining existence. And not only that, within the spiritual realm, being the source of everything that exists, both materially and spiritually. An enlightened soul can see all this. It's very little that we can see at this point. Just like a scientist, if he looks through a microscope, he can see so many things, more things than if we look through a microscope, right? Or when I was little, I went to camp and my counselor took me on a nature walk. He was pointing out all these amazing things that I didn't see, but because he pointed them out and trained us to see certain things, we could see certain things. So by training, by elevation of consciousness, by purification of consciousness, we can see more and more spiritually. Right now, as we were saying before, all these things are being described theoretically. And that's good because it gives us an understanding and an enthusiasm and a lot of faith that there is something beyond this gross material realm that we are part of and that we can live within. Each and every living being has his eternal form in the spiritual existence, and Krishna is the eternal attraction for all of them. Krishna is the complete whole, and everything else is his part and parcel. The relation is one of the servant and the served. It is transcendental and is completely distinct from our experience in material existence. This relation of servant and the served is one of my favorite sentences in all of these books. And there's a lot of books. So I'll start again. Listen to this, very sweet. This relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. This relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. Because that's love. That's love, really. Love means service. To love someone, that's a verb, right? You show your love by serving the other person in the best possible way you can. So the servant and the served. And the roles switch, right? Accepting love is just as important as giving love. We learn in spiritual life, we learn to give and receive love on the highest level. And because we learn to do that, we experience, as Prabhupada is saying here, the most congenial form of intimacy. What to speak of it's going on with God. Of course, we're all part and parcel of God. We're all part of God. And if we connect to the root, then we're connecting to everybody. So that's what's being taught here. And so when Prabhupada is saying, describing that there is the server and the served, it's not that the absolute reality is just wanting to be served. We hear that sometimes. That you have to serve God, you have to love God. It's true. Same time, God is reciprocating unlimitedly with us. And we can experience that also. So there's one thing that attracts God, and that's love. And when that is expressed towards his devotees, and everyone is a devotee of God, either consciously or unconsciously, when one expresses that towards the devotees of God, then God becomes subservient to that person. He becomes subservient to the love of his devotees. So he reciprocates. And that exchange, that connection, that divine connection, that's called yoga. That's what the word yoga means, to link up. Yoke means to link. Yoga means to link up. With what? With a computer? Video game? No, actually, the purpose of yoga is to link up with the Supreme. And if you read in the Bhagavad Gita, the description of the different yoga paths and how they culminate in this pure love for God, then one can understand more and more the import of this word yoga, the significance of it. And so this is what Prabhupada is describing here in this beautiful sentence. The relation of servant and the served is the most congenial form of intimacy. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. Everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord. Even in the present conditional state of material existence, that will gradually give one the clue to actual life and please him to complete satisfaction. So that's just a little taste of the ocean of knowledge that's described in these books. We have about 40 this size. They're all a lot of fun to read. And by this process of hearing, reading, or hearing the transcendental sound vibration that we were listening to as we were chanting, this process is considered the most important part of the system of bhakti yoga. Because by hearing divine sound vibration, one's consciousness becomes cleansed of all the dirty things, all the contamination within the heart. Can you identify with that, what I'm saying in terms of contamination within the heart? As we grow older, we begin to realize more and more that we have to work on ourselves a little bit or a lot. And the more one wants to see oneself, the more one wants to understand oneself and progress internally, the more one sees that one has to become purified of these contaminations within the heart. An example. An example of something within the heart that is not...
to be cleansed?
Yeah.
An example would be those things that distract you from the ultimate source, that is Krishna, I guess.
All right. For example. Like what?
For example, when I was sitting here listening to the mantras, I would feel some... stress coming up about my other duties that I have on school or, you know, this and that, but I had to, in that moment, just let go of that and to cleanse myself with the mantras and to know that the reality that I'm experiencing in this moment with these mantras is what's most important and that everything else is contamination.
In the sense that if you take it as the all in life, without having as a priority your spiritual life, it could be a distraction. Because we have to do these things. We have to exist.
Yes.
But having the right perspective. So if we don't have the right perspective, if we have a material perspective, and that supersedes our spiritual perspective, it's a contamination. Yeah, that's a good example. Anyone else? Maybe it's a very strong word, but when you think of it, I was thinking like something like envy, for example. We don't want to feel it.
Greed, lost.
Yeah,
like
yeah, all these things. Mm-hmm. Now, if you speak to someone on the street, they might think, "Well, I mean, those things are cool." they motivate you in life to, you know, act, to excel, and to enjoy, right? But we don't think so. Probably most of us here don't think like that. We can see how they distract us from who we really are, which, according to what we've read and according to what we can experience, we're servants. That's our position. We're part of the supreme whole, and it's the function of the part to serve the whole. So the question is, where do we fit in? Or what's the right thing? What's the right thing for me to do? I remember at one point, before I knew much about spiritual life, I started asking that question. After asking all the wrong questions, I began asking, what's the right thing for me to do? What's the right way for me to live? What's the right way for me to act, to talk, to think? So, the more we question these things, the more Krishna sends answers. And this hearing process, because we're always hearing something. If not externally, we're always hearing the mind, right? The concept. Right? In fact, we get very tired at the end of the day, not necessarily because we've engaged in so much activity, physical activity, but the mind needs a rest. If someone's enlightened, that person doesn't need to sleep so much. There's a part of a verse, Evam Prasanna Manaso, that refers to an enlightened person being enlivened in the mind. If you're enlivened in the mind, it's hard to even get to sleep. And you want to wake up. And you have all this energy, right? If you're not enthused, if you're depressed, it's hard to have energy to do anything. So, the idea is to become enlivened in the mind, to understand what are spiritual thoughts, spiritual sound vibrations, understand what is a spiritual understanding of life, and absorb the mind in that. See everything in a spiritual perspective. And to do that, if one hears transcendental knowledge, that's so enlivening and purifying that becomes part of one's consciousness. One begins to see the world with that perspective rather than all these other perspectives that are brought about by these contaminations, impurities of envy, lust, greed, anger, all of these things. So the transcendental knowledge purifies the heart, purifies the consciousness. One begins thinking differently and acting differently. And the mantra is so powerful in that respect. It's explained that the Supreme is personally present in everything that's directly related with Him. So that transcendental sound of the name of the Supreme. And there are different mantras with different names. The Hare Krishna mantra is the principal one that's recommended. We chant other mantras as well. So that sound vibration is none different from the Supreme. So the Supreme Consciousness is there. And the devotees before were chanting so nicely. Because of that, we could hear very nicely that calling out to the Supreme. It's a call. You're actually addressing the Divine Mother and the Divine Father. Prabhupada explains it like this. Hare refers to Radharani, the Divine Mother, who's an expansion of Krishna. Radharani is also Krishna, expanded to perform a different function as the Divine Mother. And through the Divine Mother, one reaches the Divine Father. And that's Krishna. So we're calling out for that connection to be spiritually united with the Supreme and with all living entities. It's a call to enable us to love and serve. And it's also, Prabhupada explained that it's like the call of a child for its mother. The child is completely dependent on its mother. And when the mother's not around, it's real scary. Did you ever get lost when you were a little child? I did once. I still remember the scariest thing.
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart. Every time.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're lost. And the more we realize that, the more we realize that we're isolated from our own spiritual nature and from everyone in the real, real sense. Superficially, we're not isolated. Superficially, we can connect. Spiritually, we're still a little bit isolated. So, if we want to connect and we see the need to connect, then we'll come to the point of crying like a child for its mother when we chant. And also the chanting can be done in a happy mood of glorification too. So many emotions can be there. The idea is to chant the mantra with attention, you were saying, focus on the sound vibration, and feeling. As much feeling as possible. And that feeling comes as we're hearing transcendental knowledge, as we're applying it in our lives, as we're meditating on it, just like what we read tonight, just a little bit. If we can hear this knowledge and we can hear the mantra, chant it and speak the knowledge, then our consciousness will change to such a great degree because we'll be affected emotionally by these things. And that emotion, that spiritual emotion that we can begin to feel gives us so much strength and faith that this is the real thing. This is the real thing. And this is what I'm going to pursue. It doesn't require giving up. For me, it did. I had the need to leave college and pursue this path completely. Most pursue their education or their particular goals and have families. And we have a very big congregation. There are a few monks and a very big congregation of families who are also pursuing this 100%, doing their duties because they have to, but not becoming overwhelmed, over-absorbed in everything that's going on in this world, because it could be such a distraction. So much competition for our consciousness, for our money, for our souls. Right? This is what you need to do to be happy, etc., 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 etc. If we hear this transcendental knowledge, we'll know, and we experience it, then we'll know what we need to do to become truly spiritually happy. So this is a little bit of, an introduction to so many things. And Nityananda Chandra asked me to, and it, of course it makes sense, to ask you what you're thinking. This is nice to have a little interaction. If you have any comment, question about anything,
I was wondering, so Dharma, it's a kind of like our job for, you said for sustenance?
Well, for spiritual. It can mean be understood on so many different levels.
Yeah, and I guess on the level I was trying to understand it was, things that I do that I guess make me, like, that I feel it's like my calling, such as, my career, you know, would that be some form of dharma, my substance?
Yeah, it has to do with your, in Sanskrit, it's varna and your ashram. The whole package is called varnashram dharma. So you have a dharma in terms of what your propensities are. And you also, in spiritual life, you have an ashram. Mm-hmm. Just like, I'm a swami. That's my spiritual calling. You either are or will be married. That's called grihastha. So that's, and within those dharmas, or within those roles that you're playing, you have spiritual duties. Mine might be a little different than yours, because I travel, I teach. Your dharma would be to stay in one place, probably, earn your livelihood through your occupation. And your dharma would also be to practice spiritual life as a grihastha, as a householder. So your dharma would be twofold in terms of what your material propensities are, how you utilize your material propensities in service, either by directly, for example, we have doctors in our movement. So sometimes they help the members of the congregation. That's their spiritual service. They also have, they also make money with their occupation. They're not utilizing their time and energy 100% in helping all the devotees, all the members of the congregation. They're helping others with the fruits of their labor. They're also helping the temple. Mm-hmm. So your dharma would be either to utilize your talents either directly and or indirectly by making money and helping out. Or, and helping out could mean also that you're inspired to do some spiritual project on your own. So you could see your dharma on different levels. Generally speaking, our dharma is to serve the Supreme, spiritually and through our occupation, which is also spiritual if we're utilizing that in service. So our dharma would be, as Prabhupada is explaining, to hear transcendental knowledge. It's everybody's dharma. It's our occupation. And to chant transcendental sound vibration, sacred mantras. You're smiling, how come?
I was wondering what transcendental knowledge sounded like.
Oh, yeah, it's like we were describing the nature of the soul. There's material knowledge, and transcendental means beyond the material. So, transcendental knowledge sounds like, as I was saying, Satchitananda. That's the nature of the soul, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. That's transcendental knowledge. That's how the Bhagavad Gita begins. Transcendental knowledge. Krishna is also Satchitananda, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. In fact, Krishna is the fountain of it, the source of it all. And where Anu, infinitesimal, spiritually, materially also. Krishna is Vibhu, unlimited, qualitatively and quantitatively. So that's transcendental knowledge. Maharaj Parikit, this Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken set for 7 days and 7 nights. Sukadeva Goswami was speaking this. It's filled with transcendental knowledge. So you can go for 7 days and seven nights hearing transcendental knowledge. And that would just be the tip of the iceberg. So does that give you an idea of...
Yeah.
Now there's material knowledge, which there's quite a bit of it going around these days, isn't there?
Right.
Everywhere you look. So much you can cram your brain with. So much. You can surf the internet 7 days, seven nights, right? Without sleeping and keep going. But how far will it get us spiritually? So that's actually the challenge that we all face. How to put aside some time, how to have the energy, the desire to engage in a little bit of spiritual practice. Like we were doing the meditation that we do before. We also do it on beads. Chant the mantra softly on beads when we're alone or with a few others. So we might say, well, I don't have the time to do that. So we really have to analyze, how much time do I really need to spend in my material pursuits, and how much time can I put aside for my spiritual pursuits? It's really an important question to ask. It's a great challenge, because we can say, all right, I'll put aside this amount of time. Then the day starts rolling, and you wind up not doing it because of getting distracted by so many other things. So it really takes a lot of determination and spiritual strength to engage in what is called sadhana, a spiritual practice. Even if it's a half hour a day, or 15 minutes a day sometimes, seems like a lot. That's why it's explained that sadhu sangha is very important. You heard the word sadhu before? Sadhu refers to people who are following a spiritual path. Sometimes the word sadhu refers to a highly elevated person. Spiritually. Sangha means to associate. So sadhu sangha means to associate with spiritually minded people. You're smiling again. What are you smiling about this time? Okay. It means to associate with spiritually minded people. And that gives us the determination, the desire to follow our spiritual path. And it's very, very, very helpful. Very helpful. That's why Prabhupada started this movement and established so many temples all over the world to give people what is called shelter or ashram. Ashram means place of shelter. Just like this room, it's in repair right now. You'll see it as you keep coming. Hopefully you will. It'll gradually be fixed up very, very nicely. And this would be called an ashram, a place where one could take shelter. It'll also be called a darshan room. You know why it's called the darshan room? Nityananda Chandra will now explain why they chose to call it the darshan room.
The word darshan means to see, so it's a spiritual clarity space.
Space for spiritual clarity. That's nice. Darshan room. Beautiful.
It sounds like shelter.
Shelter, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very similar. Okay. I think Nityananda Chandrababu is very enthused to chant right now. So we'll have more time later to talk. So I wanted to thank you very, very much for coming tonight. It's a great pleasure being with all of you. Nice to see some kids around too. You're a kid, right? You call yourself a kid? I'll tell you one story before we stop. One story. We had a gathering in one of our members' homes last year, And there are all these young children in front of me. This was after the class, right before we were going to start taking dinner. I said, hey, what do you call yourselves? You call yourself kids? Is that what you call yourself, kids? And they said, yeah, we're kids. And they're adults. And you're old. Nice to see you.
You surpassed adult.
Thank you, yes. Yes. Okay, so Nityananda Chandra just disappeared. Changed his mind? Oh, okay. You're going to leave?
Dinner's going to be served shortly.
No, please, we want to hear you chant. Yeah, at least 15, 20 minutes? Okay.
So you all know what we're chanting? The mantra? The Hare Krishna mantra? Are you familiar? Everyone's familiar with the Hare Krishna mantra? Can we just go through the words? Hare Krishna, if you just repeat after me, it's a call and response. So if you want to repeat, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
And do you know that, how many of you have done music before?
You mean sung or played?
Sung or played instruments or can keep a beat. So if we can practice, everyone can chant, can clap. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And so I'm going to sing a little and then I ask that everybody sing after and then we'll sing. And then that way it creates a